Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Africa Link comes to you from our DW studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Hello and welcome to the program. Coming up, Kenya's opposition CORD Alliance blames government for rising insecurity as it calls for a national referendum.
The declining security situation in the country is a clear demonstration of a regime that has abdicated the highest calling of any responsible government to protect the lives and property of its citizens.
Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan meets parents of Chibok abducted girls as they spend 100 days in captivity. Some say he's too late.
Took the prompting of a 17-year-old teenager, Malala, for the president to acknowledge he should visit the girls. That is cruel from the president.
And it's tilapia time in Ghana. We hear how some Ghanaians are making a living from the fish in our African On The Move segment. It's all here in the next 25 minutes, so don't go anywhere.
Top story.
We begin in Kenya, where the opposition CORD Alliance, led by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, has set up a committee of experts to spearhead its call for a referendum. Following the July 7th opposition rally dubbed Saba Saba in Kenya, CORD has launched a political campaign which they've named Okoa Kenya or Save Kenya. They are seeking to push for a national referendum on critical issues such as withdrawing Kenyan troops from Somalia. James Chimanyula attended a press briefing hosted by CORD in Nairobi and filed this report.
Kenya's opposition parliamentary group has unanimously approved a proposal to hold a national referendum on crucial challenges facing the country. The challenges, according to the group, comprising 98 members of parliament, include insecurity, corruption, nepotism, tribalism, and a series of unspecified injustices. The MPs decided on the move after meeting for 9 hours at a hotel on the southeastern outskirts of the capital, Nairobi. However, the MPs did not say how and when the referendum, spearheaded by opposition leader Raila Odinga, will be held. A statement on the approval to hold the referendum was read at a press conference by CORD Secretary General Anyang Nyong'o in the presence of Odinga and former Kenyan Vice President Kalonzo Musyoka, now number two in the opposition.
The declining security situation in the country is a clear demonstration of a regime that has abdicated the highest calling of any responsible government to protect the lives and property of its citizens. As Kenyans continue to be ravaged by marauding gangs and terrorists all over the country and the coastal region in particular, CORD condemns the Jubilee leadership's hollow rhetoric and never-ending ultimatums that have yielded nothing and exhibited little empathy with the victims of these attacks.
Without saying how, the opposition statement claimed that the government was solely behind attacks that have frequently occurred in the country.
CORD is disturbed and concerned that aspects of insecurity engulfing the coast is the work of agents of the state and the deliberate diversionary tactics devised to tribalize the escalating security situation. We demand an overhaul of the security and intelligence management of the country and a comprehensive plan for peace and security for all residents of the coastal region and the country in general.
The statement further renewed the opposition's call to President Uhuru Kenyatta's ruling party Jubilee coalition to pull Kenyan troops from Somalia.
Jubilee administration presents to the people of Kenya with a roadmap for the withdrawal of our gallant sons and daughters fighting in Somalia. Updates the country on how many of our soldiers have been killed in that war. What kind of support the state has extended to their families. How much the government is spending on this war and how much expenditure is being incurred by AMISOM.
AMISOM, that Anyang Nyong'o is referring to, is the acronym for the African Union Peacekeeping Force in Somalia. Kenyans have expressed mixed reactions on the opposition's plan to hold a referendum.
James Chimanyula in Nairobi. Kenya's ruling Jubilee coalition has already dismissed calls for a referendum. And the Daily Nation, a Kenyan newspaper, reported that there was a split within the CORD alliance on whether to support the referendum or not. I've been speaking to Brian Singoro Wanyama, a political scientist at Masinde Muliro University in Kakamega, to find out how much support the referendum has.
I think on the matter of referendum, CORD may not be having overwhelming support. In any case, if a referendum was to be conducted, it would have to be refereed by the IEBC, which the same CORD is accusing of impartiality. So it's a very, very tricky situation. I know the call, one thing that is comes out clear is that the call for a referendum is one way of re-energizing CORD, as it were, but it may not have a lot of support from the common man, whose interest really is to make a living.
Then why is the opposition doing this? What are their motives? Are they really concerned about the common citizen?
The motives for CORD and the opposition calling for a referendum, one thing is that for quite some bit of time, CORD has not been on the map. There has been a lull, a political lull in their coalition. And by calling for a referendum, one would sense that they're trying to re-energize themselves and also to position themselves on the relevant political map. So in a way, whereas the issues that they're raising, actually issues of unemployment, insecurity, the IEBC performance, the sharp increase in prices, and insecurity are real and resonant to the people, I think the people generally may not be in for, majority of them may not be in for the referendum. It is a 50-50 scenario. At this moment in time, coming especially on the heels after the dialogue proposal was rejected by the current government, the CORD is trying to re-energize itself by trying to influence the common Mwananchi through the call for a referendum. So it's a tactic I think they're using, and they want to use it to trump up support for themselves. And at the same time, I think, try to generate the heat of the current government so that it can listen to their complaints and issues, which seem to be resonating very well with the common man.
Kenyan political analyst Brian Singoro Wanyama.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Painful farewell. Since the mass abduction of the Nigerian schoolgirls by Boko Haram militants 3 months ago, at least 11 of their parents have died from heart failure, high blood pressure and other illnesses, Pogo Bitrus, a community leader, said. On Tuesday, President Goodluck Jonathan met some of the parents and relatives of the missing girls for the first time. The meeting in the capital, Abuja, comes at a time when there are reports of a worsening security situation in the northeast of the country. Samuel Okoya reports.
The parents of the abducted girls and the 51 schoolgirls who escaped when Boko Haram attacked their school were among those who attended the meeting with President Goodluck Jonathan. The president led a government delegation which consisted of some state governors, ministers and service chiefs. The meeting lasted for about 4 hours and took place behind closed doors. Ruben Abati, who is special advisor to the president on media, said after the meeting that President Jonathan had assured the families of the government's determination to bring the abducted girls back alive. Ita Ekpenyong, head of Nigeria's State Security Service, had earlier given them this assurance.
The issue of Chibok girls is government is making efforts. We know where they are, but we don't want to endanger their lives. That is the truth. We want to take it gradually and release them at the appropriate time. We know where they are.
Nigerians have waited for the past month for the president to meet the families of the abducted girls. He only decided to do so after the Pakistani schoolgirl activist Malala Yousafzai met him last week. Many ordinary Nigerians like Mayowa Adebola are unhappy that it took the prompting from Malala for President Jonathan to meet the families of the girls.
And it took the prompting of a 17-year-old teenager, Malala, for the president to acknowledge he should visit the girls. That is cruel from the president. Lot of people, activists in the country, even some governors, the people leading the Bring Back Our Girls campaign had urged him, go there, encourage the parents and the relatives, let them know you're behind them. He didn't do it, not until this teenager came. And for us, it's a slam to the face. that the teenager he could listen to after we, the 170 million Nigerians that campaigned, go and visit these people. So I really think it's a poor decision at this time.
But many believe it would have been appropriate for President Jonathan to visit the families rather than for the families to visit him. The president, however, defends his action.
The issue of a visit to the families, there are lots of misconceptions. These girls have been removed from the school. So visiting the school per se does not solve the problem. The commitment of the president and the Nigerian government is to find where these girls are. They are not from one family. So there is no one family that you go and visit.
With the girls into their fourth month of captivity, many will wait anxiously for the Nigerian government to fulfill its promise to rescue them alive.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Africa on the Move.
Let the frying begin. Tilapia fish has become a popular delicacy in Ghana. The trend has boosted tilapia demand in the country and has made many entrepreneurs to invest in commercial tilapia farming. Isaac Aleji was in the streets of Accra to witness how tilapia is becoming the first choice of meal for many Ghanaians and thereby providing an income for those who trade in it.
This is the busy Osu Oxford Street in Ghana's capital Accra. As people go about their businesses, there is one particular food joint that is attracting Ghanaians. It serves that popular delicacy, tilapia, served with hot pepper, onions and local dishes like banku and kinki. Maami Ekwia owns this tilapia joint and says the business is extremely good.
We buy the tilapia fresh from the market and spiced it well with ginger, among others. People like it very much, and I must say this tilapia business is good. If you work hard, you will gain a lot.
With a huge demand for tilapia, the aquaculture industry is attracting many farmers. They need to produce fish to meet the growing local demand. Along the shores of Ghana's Volta Lake, several cages have been put up for rearing the fingerlings that will develop into tilapia. I am at Rehoboth Goshen Fisheries Limited. Farm workers are feeding some fingerlings, while others are already harvesting the full-grown tilapia. The farm is owned by Menson Tokonum, a former banking manager at the Bank of Africa. He started this business in 2011 and now employs 21 workers. Tokonu talks of the challenges of starting the new business.
With all the catch fisheries we have in the sea and with all the local fishermen giving us fish, Ghana, we are not able to produce our consumption for even 50%. We have all the potentials. My aim is to produce for Ghanaians at least to make sure that everybody has fish to eat. And then after that, we look for export.
Coming from his job as a banker, Tokonu has had to learn a lot about his new trade. He's eager to share his knowledge.
That was harvesting. In harvesting, you know, sometimes you can harvest as much as about 4 tons. That is 4,000 kilograms from a net. Depending on your stocking density. What we do during harvest is that you lift the cage, you scoop them out into your boat and send them to the shore for sale.
Last year, a delegation of Ghanaians visited Europe to learn new technologies in the sector. Dr. Felix Yao Klamatiku is a scientist with Ghana's Water Research Institute. He says that the research has helped fish farmers and transformed the industry.
Over the last 15 years, we've been involved in the development of the Akosombo strain of the Nile tilapia. This strain has been developed to help farmers with fingerlings, that is fast-growing fingerlings. And it is helping the aquaculture industry in Ghana.
For a long time, fish farming in Ghana was only done on a small-scale basis, to feed a family or sell a little at the market. The government and the World Bank, however, tried to promote commercial fish farming since the 1990s. Tokonu would like to see more young people in his line of business.
It's one of the areas even governments should be directly involved and encourage young people. One of my aims is to make sure that we have enough fish in Ghana. Honestly, we want to encourage young people to go into it. Even though it is capital intensive, start small and begin to grow, and in the long run, you become big.
It's a tough business, he says, but Tokono hopes to feed many more Ghanaians yearning for tilapia. Once his business has developed, he plans to take the next step and export his fish.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra. Just to remind you that our latest Africa Link listeners competition has officially ended. We thank all those who took part by sending in answers, and we shall soon announce the winners of the contest after sifting through all the entries and conducting the final draw. So keep listening to Africa Link. Now, we've just heard of Ghana's tilapia, but what about those who can't afford this nutritional, delicious dish? In the early 1990s, the figure of those suffering from malnutrition stood at over a billion. Today, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, that number has fallen to just under 850 million. But this figure fails to take into account some 2 billion people who are still suffering from what is termed as hidden hunger. This report by Fabian Schmidt has been adapted for Africa Link by Mark Caldwell.
Hidden hunger refers to a lack of essential vitamins and minerals in a person's diet. Such deficiencies can weaken the body's resistance to disease and can cause permanent damage, such as blindness. According to a report released in Berlin on Tuesday by two aid agencies, Terre des Hommes and Welthungerhilfe, hidden hunger is prevalent in India, Bangladesh, Central Asia and parts of Africa. Wolfgang Jarmann, General Secretary of Welthungerhilfe, said hidden hunger is just a bigger problem as the more conventional kind of hunger.
In eastern and southern Africa, people often live on a diet of cornmeal. This satiates their hunger, but it does not contain a number of essential vitamins.
Diseases caused by vitamin A deficiency kill between 300 and 700,000 children every year. A further 300,000 go blind. Vitamin B9 is equally essential for a healthy diet. A lack of this substance in pregnant women can lead to malformation of the fetus. There are also nutritional hazards for women who have just given birth. Wolfgang Jarmann again.
Mothers who are breastfeeding their babies often suffer from deficiencies in vitamin A and iron. This has a direct, adverse impact on the health of those children. And in severe cases, when the mothers do not get enough iodine, the children can become mentally disabled.
Ideally, everybody would be eating a balanced diet and these deficiencies wouldn't occur in the first place. But many poor people can't afford this, and so basic foodstuffs are fortified with essential micronutrients. This is enforced by legislation in 80 countries around the globe.
In Zambia, corn is fortified with vitamins A and D. It is also possible to enrich food just before it is eaten with multivitamin powder.
Another promising development is biofortification. This means breeding new varieties of basic foodstuffs that absorb more minerals or produce more vitamins on their own accord.
When breeding these new varieties, the nutritional value can be deliberately increased. The resistance of the crop to pests or drought can also be strengthened.
Trials with such new varieties have been carried out in Africa on sweet potatoes, beans and cassava. But these efforts to combat hidden hunger only make sense if the seed is sold to farmers at a price they can afford. Ideally, farmers would be able to retrieve seed for this year's planting season from last year's crop. Wolfgang Jarmann again.
Subsistence farmers must be in a position to use these improved varieties. They shouldn't have to depend on one supplier on the world market, nor should there be any increase in seed prices.
As hidden hunger is a poverty-related issue, it can't be solved if those who are suffering from it end up paying more for their food than they did before.
A report by Fabian Schmidt, presented by Mark Caldwell.
Making a difference.
Reverse roles. Every year, young Germans travel to different parts of Africa to work as volunteers. For a couple of years now, some organizations have been trying to make it possible for young Africans to come to Germany to do voluntary service. Victoria Engel met a young Nigerian lady who left her country for a small German town and is now making a difference in the lives of elderly Germans.
That laugh belongs to 26-year-old Ngozi Jane Francis Onyali from Nigeria. Since September, she has been working as a volunteer at an old people's home in Daun, a little town in Germany.
They've told me already about Germany, but I said, okay, I have to witness, I have to see by myself.
Ngozi helps to organise and assist during meals, look after residents, or to do the laundry. She's always ready to crack a smile for anyone who's around. Linda is one of her colleagues and describes working with her.
Excellent. It's really fun. She's always ready to help and she laughs a lot.
Ngozi is one of three Africans currently doing a period of voluntary service in Germany with the so-called reverse program, organized by the Sophia Association. Although Sophia stands for Social Peace Service Abroad, abroad meaning outside Germany, the former one-way street has now been turned into a bilateral exchange. Kerstin Becker is responsible for the reverse program and explains how it came about.
We at Sophia have been making it possible for volunteers to go abroad for more than 20 years. After some time, our partners started to express a wish to be able to send volunteers to Germany too, in order to make these cooperations livelier.
The main problems hindering a truly equal exchange of volunteers to and from Germany are, not surprisingly, finance and bureaucracy. In addition, many institutions here have no real idea of how this could work for them. When Ngozi first came to Germany, her first big problem was of a very practical kind.
I'm allergic to cold. And when I came, oh God, it was very, very cold for me. I nearly wore my gloves. And they told me, what? I said, I'm cold. They said, but it's summer.
Ngozi is a very kind and cheerful person. It's not hard to imagine her singing and dancing through the old people's home, even though she is 6,000 kilometers away from home.
My plan is to go back home, because I miss my people. I really do miss them. I would like to stay more, but I have to go home first to meet them, because I miss them a lot.
Although Ngozi was struggling with tears when she spoke of her family, it didn't take long for her to laugh again. And when she goes back to Nigeria in August, there is one thing she said she would especially miss about Germany. Deep-fried chunks of potato, known here as pommes.
Victoria Engel reporting.
Harare, Nairobi or Abuja. Africa Link correspondents reporting for you from wherever the story breaks.
Just before we wind up, let's recap on our main stories. Kenya's Cord Opposition Coalition has named a team of experts to spearhead a call for a national referendum. Nigeria's president, Goodluck Jonathan, has met with some of the parents of the schoolgirls abducted in Chibok. The UN Food Agency, FAO, says an estimated 2 billion people still suffer from hidden hunger, a lack of vitamins and minerals essential for a healthy diet. That's all we had. For comments and suggestions, send us a text message to +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de. Or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Thanks for listening. I'm Crispin Mwakideu, and bye for now.